Only one person can dismantle patriarchy and redefine manhood. You know who it is. Let's talk about it with Carolyn James on Steve Brown, etc.
He's an old white guy, an author, broadcaster, and seminary professor who's sick of religion. And he's brought friends. Please welcome Steve Brown, etc.
Hey, we're so glad you're here. I say it every time, and I mean it every time. You always have a seat at our table. And I'm Steve, the aforementioned old white guy. Our executive producer, Matthew Porter, is here. Matthew is convinced if he keeps turning off lights around his house, he'll save enough money to put the kids through college. It's kind of getting that way, isn't it, man, with the prices going up on electricity. Our video director and one-man IT department, John Myers, is in his tech bunker. John wonders if it's a sin to click that you've read the terms and conditions for the computer update when you know that you didn't read them. Yes, it is a sin.
Yeah, John. Bearing false witness.
Repent. He still so forgive you. And Dr. George Bingham is the president of Key Life. George believes that with a great beard comes great responsibility. And, of course, Kathy Wyatt is the soft feminine side of the program. We all think of Kathy baking quite often. Usually while we're standing on the bathroom scale.
You're smart.
And our guest today is one of my favorite people. We don't agree on anything politically. And we're not on the same boat sociologically. However, we both love Jesus and we come out in the same place. So it's going to be an interesting conversation today. Carolyn is an award-winning author. She holds a BA in sociology, an MA in biblical studies. She's also a leading voice in Missio Alliance. What was that called before, Carolyn? No, the seminary, I'm sorry.
Oh, the seminary was Biblical Seminary, and it's Missio now, Missio okay. Seminary, and it's in Philadelphia. It's a big, big change.
Oh, it is. Well, at any rate, Carolyn is the voice of Missio Alliance, and she's blogged about religion for the Huffington Post. Her new book is a second and revised edition, which I hold in my nicotine-stained fingers. Maelstrom, How Jesus Dismantles Patriarchy and Redefines Manhood. Carolyn, you've been dealing with this a very long time, not just as an author and as a speaker, but it's been an existential place for you too, hasn't it?
Yes. Well, I'm, you know, just coming to terms with the Bible's big vision for God's sons and daughters. And it actually exploded for me in a classroom at RTS with the Book of Ruth, which I've written about. You know, I think there are a lot of struggles with what we are taught it means to be a man or a woman. And I've talked to men who struggle with the pressure on them to man up and take charge and, you know, be responsible for everything. And, oh my goodness, it has been life-giving to me. To dig in deeper and ask different questions. One of the first things that fell apart for me in a good way was realizing that when I read the Bible, I'm not reading an American book. That I, in my life, culture, how I was raised, my education, am as far away from the world of the Bible as you can get in today's world. And that to understand the Bible, we need help. It's from an ancient, full-fledged patriarchal culture, like some cultures we see in the world today. And it's been a long journey for me, but this book was one where I had written lots of books about women in the Bible and tried to bring to life the strength of their stories. And in the process, I would run into these men who get overlooked in the Bible. And they are, in their own stories, battling what I call the maelstrom, which is patriarchy.
And explain. Stop for just a moment and do a definition of patriarchy. I guess most people are familiar with that word, but maybe not. Maybe explain that, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. Well, patriarchy means father rule, and it establishes male rule over women, children, property, but also over other men. And it's the culture, it's the cultural backdrop of the Bible's message. There's debate about this, but it seems pretty clear to me that patriarchy begins in Genesis 3, because Genesis 1 is where God entrusts outward rule over creation to his image bearers, male and female. And in Genesis 3, after humanity rebels, our first parents, then there is this male rule over women. And as it plays out in the biblical narrative, patriarchy is the rule of men over women, children, and property, but also over other men. Patriarchy establishes a pyramid structure where there's little room at the top and you need a well-populated base. And so it was an inversion of God's vision for humanity to be stewards of creation, to be ruling outward, to do his work in the world. They were not created. Human beings were not created to rule over one another. And this, and the book of Genesis itself dismantles patriarchy, because patriarchy, the linchpin of patriarchy, is primogeniture, which is the privilege of the firstborn. In the family, in Genesis, the firstborn would get a double inheritance. So if you had two sons, the firstborn would get two pieces of the pie and the second son would get one. And it is what tears the family of Abraham to pieces. And it actually starts with Cain and Abel, because Cain is the firstborn, but God is pleased with his younger brother. And so he kills him. And all the way through Genesis, you have God bypassing the firstborn to choose the secondborn. He chooses Isaac, not Ishmael. He chooses Jacob, not Esau. He chooses Judah, and Jacob chooses son number 11, Joseph. And it tears the family apart. You know, you could call the book of Genesis warring brothers, but it's, you know, God isn't playing by patriarchy's rules. And, you know, I didn't understand that when I went in to write Maelstrom, I wanted to write the stories of men that tend to get bypassed but that really exhibit a battle against this power struggle to be at the top of the power pyramid and instead embody a gospel version of what it means to be human, what it means to be male. And they are the ones who led me to patriarchy. I wasn't thinking about writing about patriarchy, but it became unavoidable. So, but patriarchy, what we've done in the church is to embrace a kinder, gentler version of that. When God's vision for his sons and daughters is radical, it's embodied by Jesus. No, you know, Jesus isn't the center of conversation when we talk about definitions of masculinity. But he's the perfect image bearer. We should be studying him.
Okay, well, we'll probably do some talking about Jesus before we finish this. Some things did radically change. Carolyn, James' book is Maelstrom, How Jesus Dismantles Patriarchy and Redefines Manhood. And this book isn't just for women, it's for men. We're struggling with our own definition, and you'll find this helpful. Hey, don't go away. Like Jesus, we're going to return.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have four mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These four mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
Hey, thanks for joining us. We're hanging out with Carolyn James. Her new book is Second Revised Edition. And since she first wrote it, some things have really happened in spades. The name of the book is Maelstrom, How Jesus Dismantles Patriarchy and Redefines Manhood.
Carolyn, you kind of nicely outlined the sort of the source of patriarchy and the contrast from creation and Genesis and so forth. But how is it kind of manifested and what problem outcomes do you see from patriarchy?
Okay. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
No, I mean, look at the headlines. Look at the headlines. You know, underneath those headlines is a battle for power and supremacy. And that's what patriarchy stirs up. And we see it in more benign forms, but it's exploded everywhere in the crises that are happening in the world. You know, there's a clamoring for power. And it's power over others. And the power that is bestowed on humanity at creation is the power outward over creation. It's not over each other. And I, you know, One of the big things, this is why there's a second version of Maelstrom. Many people are saying that Maelstrom, I wrote Maelstrom and it was first published in 2015. Okay, that was before the next presidential election. That was before the Me Too, Church Too movements exploded. And there, people are looking at my book. People who read it then are saying this book was written before its time. And that's why I pushed to get it published again, because there's a conversation that is happening in the church that is easy to push away, but we have an epidemic inside the church of clergy sexual abuse and other forms of abuse. And, you know, it stems from patriarchy, you know, where you have power over others and you abuse that power. And the book that was written first, and I don't know if you've talked about it on your show, but it's a bestseller, Jesus and John Wayne. And that's where she gives Kristen Dumais, who's a Christian historian, scholar, and she has researched the history of the evangelical church, 20th, 21st century. And she lands on pulling together how this clamor for masculinity, you know, man up and be the man and you take charge and you're the one who's responsible for everything. And that it has exploded in abuse, domestic abuse of pastors saying, well, you know, it's okay maybe if you get slapped around a little bit at home before you come to the church for help. This is coming from leading evangelicals where they say, you know, go back home and try to submit more. And she comes back with a purple face. And we have little children who are abused in church by their teachers or by their youth pastors. And because the evangelical church is dispersed in all these different denominations and independent organizations, that we've never put it together. For a long time, it was sort of assumed this was a Roman Catholic problem, but it isn't. It's rampant in the church, and it's easy to shove under the rug. And when I read Jesus and John Wayne, I already knew about most of that, but it was just sort of horrifying to see it all pulled together. And it raises the question, what do we do? How do we address this? And all sorts of efforts have been made to deal with what do you do when there are allegations and how do you report to law enforcement and bring in the professional counselors and, you know, don't re-abuse the victims. And my work digs into what are the roots of this? What is enabling, what is making it possible for the church to have an environment that is conducive to abuse? And it's verbal abuse, it's the abuse of power, the abuse of finances, and it's the abuse of women and children and other men. And you know, I think we can't sit still. And, you know, Dumais was prevented from taking the next step and saying, what do we do about this? And there were two books she wanted to talk about. And one was Maelstrom. And the other was Nate Pyle's book, Man Enough, which is a wonderful book. And, you know, to look again, is this what God is calling his sons to do? Is their calling something that must be earned, or is it a birthright? And I've argued that a man's calling is better than this, and it is a birthright, and it begins when he begins, and it doesn't expire. You know, somebody may try to beat it out of him, but whatever they do to abuse him only is a greater violation because he is God's image bearer. And men are called to reflect their creator. That's why the center of the discussion of manhood needs to be Jesus, because he's the perfect imago Dei. And I'm passionate about this. I think we are in deep trouble, and we've got more to learn about Jesus and the gospel. And the more I learn, the more radical and life-giving it is. The stories of men that I tell in this book, I just love these men. They break my heart. They give me a bigger vision of what it means to be a follower of Jesus. They give better good news to the world. One of the things that drove me to write Maelstrom was the ISIS crisis, because they're looking for...
Carolyn, put your finger right there in that sentence, and
okay.
we'll finish the sentence on the other side of the break. We do have to pay for this, so we have to take a commercial break, and we're going to come back. You don't want to go anywhere. You may not agree with all of this, but you need to hear it. Been good for me to hear it. The name of the book is called Maelstrom, How Jesus Dismantled Patriarchy and Redefines Manhood. Don't go anywhere.
From Key Life comes two mini books, What Do You Do for a Living? And Life After Retirement. What Do You Do for a Living by Justin Holcomb addresses the problem of defining ourselves by what we do and how we perform in our work instead of by who we know, a gracious, loving God who defines who we are. Life After Retirement by Steve Brown examines how those transitioning from work to retirement often experience a loss of purpose in life, and how the quest for personal significance can best be answered by God's radical grace, love, and purpose for our lives sufficient to carry us through this transition. What Do You Do for a Living and Life After Retirement can help guide people struggling with either work or retirement. These two Key Life mini books are available through keylife.org for a donation of $6.
Hey, we're glad you're with us. We're talking with Carolyn James. By the way, you can keep up with Carolyn at Carolyn Custis James. Is there a period between that? Yeah, periodjames.com, and on Twitter and Facebook at Carolyn E-Z-E-R. And you'll enjoy going there. You had just brought up ISIS, and my hackles get up when you do. I'd like for you to continue with the sentence and don't say nice things, okay?
Well, what I was about to say is that experts, you know, when we were going through all the trauma post 9/11, and they were looking at the fact that Western men were being drawn to ISIS. And what they discovered was that they were looking for a sense of identity, meaning, and purpose. Mm-hmm. And I said, so where are we in this conversation? You know, what do we offer these men that should draw them away from that? And, you know, God entrusts power and leadership to his image bearers in Genesis 1, you know, to rule over creation, to, it means that every human being's first responsibility is to know the God who made them to be like himself. And that this calling, you can't have a higher calling than to be God's image bearer. We are agents of God's purposes in the world, and we need to make him our study. We need to look at the world through his eyes, to love what he loves and care about what he cares about and do what we, and it involves everything human beings do, not just what we do on Sunday or in our quiet time or when we witness, but the actual work people do to cultivate and steward the earth's resources. And that's every human being's first calling, and you can't beat it. There's nothing more uplifting, more exalting than that calling. And we all share it. And it comes with huge responsibility. It means that we participate in divine revelation. People are supposed to find out what God is like by rubbing shoulders with us. And it means that we're supposed to look after things in his world. So it's, you know, this is not maelstrom, is not calling men off. It's not telling them to be less. It really tells them to be much more. And the men in the Bible that do that are shedding cultural pressures on them to do what honors their creator. And it's extraordinary. So, you know, power was entrusted to us at creation. And the problem is when it's misused for selfish purposes. But power is a gift. And, you know, it's everything has been distorted. And one of the things that I talk about is the fact that, you know, we don't get to see what it looked like for them to live fully into this calling, because you hit Genesis chapter 3 right away. And everything else is in this broken world until you get to Jesus. So I think it's more than we ever imagined it to be. I don't think it's less. And men that read this book tell me they just feel like their lives and their stories open wide up. And it's not a male basher. You know, no man who reads this book should feel less, you know, of a human being or of a man, but that Jesus reshapes how we re-enter that original mandate.
Kathy?
Carolyn, we're coming up on a break, so we probably will have to finish up on the other side of it. But I'm curious, was there a specific point in time or a specific period of time when we started heading down this road in our understanding or our lack of understanding or whatever, as far as manhood and womanhood? Is there a specific point that you point to? That was repetitive, wasn't it?
Yeah,
when that began to happen.
Yeah, that's an important question. So I think it starts in Genesis 3, and we read it all the way through the Bible. You know, we're reading the account of a world that is disconnected from its creator.
Well, I would certainly agree with that. I think the implications of the fall are far bigger than any of us could imagine. I think you have to be careful that you're not utopian, all of us, about changing the world and making everything wonderful and finally reaching purity and sanctification, because that might not happen as quickly or as easily as you think. We're talking with Carolyn James, and her book is Maelstrom, How Jesus and He Does Dismantles Patriarchy and Redefines Manhood. I might say womanhood, too. Don't go away. We're coming back. He was irritated when the electricity went out. No television, no music, no Netflix. Then he discovered that the battery on his smartphone was dead. He decided to make some coffee, but when he went to the kitchen, he realized that without electricity, he couldn't even do that. Then he noticed his wife in the kitchen, and he sat down and talked to her. He said later, "You know, she seemed like a very nice lady." I know, technology's good, but sometimes go talk to somebody face to face. You might be surprised how nice and real they are. It's messy sometimes, but Jesus would like it. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com. Oh, you guys, some of the best parts of this program go when you can't see it or hear it, and we can't share it. But the fellowship, we always have a hymn sing and we pray and fast, but we say some things that probably are not for public consumption. If you're wondering, the book we're looking at is Maelstrom. You ought to get it. If you are as conservative as I am, who thinks that Rush Limbaugh was a liberal, you might wince. But it'll be good for you as it was good for me. Maelstrom, How Jesus Dismantles Patriarchy and Redefines Manhood.
Carolyn, you start one of the chapters by talking about John Lennon. I was like, oh, this is, but I was like immediately like, oh, I know what you're going to talk about, because he was famously an abusive, horrible human being. And yet, when he was 40, something happened. He kind of turned around. And if you listen to Just Like Starting Over, it's very optimistic. And then just right after that, his life has ended. But it's kind of indicative of that, even though you can start with what you talk about, like the father wound and this whole idea that hurt people. It's not the end of the story. So maybe take us through where do we go from here? We're all bought in that there's a problem the problem is not power, but it's abusing the power and abusing the things we've been entrusted with. But how do we pivot? Where do we go from here?
Yeah. You know, I think that we've put up a bar for men that's the wrong bar, you know, because every man, if he lives long enough, is going to decline from being, you know. And my own father lived into his 90s, and there were decisions that the family made that he was always the one that made those decisions, and we made some decisions for him. And, you know, so it's, if who you are as a man hinges on these markers that we establish, you have to be the leader, you have to be the breadwinner, you have to be the protector, and, you know, all of these things that you have to bring home the bacon. So if you get fired or lose your job or get sick, what have you lost?
Everything.
And I think that the vision that God gives for his sons is indestructible. Mm. You know, to be his image bearer, you can't have a higher calling. And I don't think we've unpacked this as much as we should, because it's a calling. It means you need to know him. You need to learn what his heart is like, you know, and that means we have to look at the cross and say, how is God's heart expressed there? You know, and Jesus had power. Jesus wasn't short on power, but he used his power in different ways. And the men I write about in this book have power, and they don't shed it. It gets redeemed, and it's amazing. So, you know, I'm not suggesting men should be wimps or that they shouldn't be leaders or that they shouldn't be strong. I'm saying all of that gets redefined by Jesus. And it's more beautiful and it's more life-giving for the man himself and for the world. And, you know, it's, you know, when you look at a group like ISIS and you see, or like the Taliban, and you see, or gangs in cities, yeah, you see young men being drawn to that, you know, this is what scholars have said. They're looking for identity, meaning, and purpose. And we have that in spades, but we don't give it to them. We tell them that they have to be the breadwinner, you know, when their wife can make more money than they can make. And so that's a threat instead of a good thing. And, you know, one of my best friends was paralyzed from the time he was 16. And he became a pastor, and some of you knew him, but, you know, how's he going to protect his wife? You know, but he was one of the most godly, wonderful friends I've had. And, you know, just breathing life into the lives of other people. You know, I think our calling is superior to what, you know, patriarchy calls a man to. And it brings out dimensions in a man that are breathtaking and life-giving. It's not about, you know, being softer or being weaker or anything. It's about, you know, living out all that God has given you in a way that honors Jesus. So, you know, I'm not against men. I love
Carolyn, we have just about a minute and a half, and I want to talk about Jesus. He said, as the Father sent me, I sent you. To do what?
Yeah, and it's amazing, especially at this time of year, to be reminded of how Jesus walked right into all the awful things that happened to him. You know, he tells his disciples, we are going up to Jerusalem, right after he tells them what's going to happen to him when he goes there. And there is a ferocity in Jesus to do what his Father is calling him to do. And it's one of the most exquisite, life-giving, life transforming actions that has ever been done in the world. And, you know, for God's sons and daughters to be as fierce about loving God with all our heart, mind, soul, and strength, and loving our neighbor as ourselves, that's what Jesus did. He was the perfect Imago Dei. And we're called to emulate that.
Mm. Oh. Carolyn, you keep writing. We'll keep talking. You're a delight. You always have been. And thank you for writing this book. I suspect you're going to get some rocks thrown at you, but that's not anything new. No. I mean, you handle them a lot better than I do. So you go. I started to say girl, but that would be offensive and sexist. And
you go, non-patriarchal figure.
Carolyn, you give my love to your husband.
Well, we both send love to you and to your gang. George, you've been great.
Hey, thanks for being
in the past.
With us. Guys, the name of the book is Maelstrom, How Jesus Dismantles Patriarchy and Redefines Manhood. It's a really good and thoughtful book, and you ought to read it, and you ought to apply some of it. Skip the sociology and the politics, and go to the meat and the heart of Jesus, and you'll like it. Gotta go. We're coming back, and we'll tell you who we're going to do it unto next week.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have four mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These four mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
Hey, that was a great time with Carolyn. I've known her for 100 years and worked for her husband for a long time and really enjoying being with her. George made a very cogent comment, said, if you're going to read the book, read all of it, especially if you're to the right of Genghis Khan. And I am. I have often been accused of promoting books that destroy people. I mean, I don't do that, but I do want you to know of good books, even if I have some disagreements. And with Carolyn, that's no secret to anybody that knows us. We're politically different. I think sociology, where she got her degree, is the equivalent of looking at chicken livers to determine the future. And I've said that to her, and I love her and her husband. But this book really is good. It's helpful. And believe it or not, we come out in the same place. And it's the same place, incidentally, and you can go back into our archives. We recently talked to Brant Hansen, and I love his title, Men We Need, God's Purpose for the Manly Man, the Avid Indoors Man, and Any Man Willing to Show Up. And I wish I could introduce Brant and Carolyn. They would get along because they're saying similar things. Brant puts it in a different way. He talks about men as keepers of the garden, and he does it in a very winsome and sometimes funny way, and Carolyn in a very scholarly, unbelievable way she deals with Scripture. But both of them say the same thing. Manning up means something different than maybe you think that it means. Kathy, who's going to be with us next week?
Next week, we have our friend Andrew Farley with us. It's been a while since Andrew's been with us, but he has a new book out called The Grace Message. Is the Gospel Really This Good?
I wonder where we're going to land on that. Until Jesus returns.
Is the Gospel really this good?
Is it really this good?
Is it really this good?
You ever think that? This can't be right. This is too good.
Who was it that said that to you one time? Said, are you sure, Steve, are you sure we're right?
Jerry Bridges,
yeah,
right. He was being criticized for his grace message, and he sent me this note. And he said, Steve, are you sure we're right? And I say, I don't know, but if we're not.
We're in trouble.
I'm in serious trouble, and you probably are too. Although I don't think he fell when everybody else did in the fall, but that's another subject altogether. Guys, we got to get out of here, but we're going to come back next week, same time, same place. It's our fond hope that you'll join us. Between now and then, don't do anything we wouldn't. That gives you a wide, wide berth.